ones you've tabled that you eventually put on?
Yeah. You know, just going through a couple of trial runs, seeing how this works. Morning, everybody. Okay. Today's Daf Yotes in Sanhedrin. We're in the second parak of Sanhedrin. And it's a shame this parak is going to end very quickly. So we're going to hit the third parak again, but as you'll see, the majority of this parak discusses the melech, the aspect of being a king of Israel, and a lot of interesting stories coming up. Today's Gemara is going to be a lot of Agarata. Most of the second parak is going to be Agarata that revolves around halacha, and almost exclusively about the king of Israel. We learned some basic rules yesterday about being the king of Israel, and that is that you can't testify. Now, I'm sorry, before we get to the king, let's finish up with our discussion of Kohen Gadol. Kohen Gadol can testify. Right? Kohen Gadol is a regular person. There's no... he is, for all intents and purposes, he has a special status as being the Kohen Gadol. He's the one who goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. He's the one who performs the service inside on Yom Kippur. But other than that, though, as far as halacha is concerned, as far as legalities are concerned, so he's a regular Jew, and therefore he could judge, he could be judged, he could testify, he could be testified about, right? Those are the basic halachas we learn regarding a Kohen Gadol. There is an issue that the Gemara is going to take up right now. On Yudchesam Advaiz, we're at the two dots right in the middle of the page. There's an issue that we're going to take up right now, and that's the issue of Kavod Abrius. Kavod Abrius is a very broad topic. Kavod Abrius, loosely translated, means human dignity. The Torah respects very much human dignity. Human dignity to the point where, as we're going to see in just a moment, sometimes even if there's a mitzvah opportunity, but if it violates your human dignity, so then you don't even have to do the mitzvah. Okay, it's a very powerful idea, this whole idea of Kavod Abrius. And so essentially what's going to bother the Gemara is that we have a Kohen Gadol, and he's going to go to court, and he's going to testify at court, right? You know how we always get that on a much smaller scale. You know how we always get the summons to serve and do our jury duty, and immediately our reaction is, at least mine is, which I'm gonna proudly display on tape, is like, you can't be serious, really? I'm gonna do jury duty, me? Okay, fine. And the answer is, yeah, even you. But Kavod Abrius, however, is very significant, and the Gemara is gonna say, Kohen Gadol is gonna sit there in court. It's crazy. The Gemara says, really, he's going to testify in the court of law on Yud Ches Amud Beis 18b, and we're halfway down the page. Vatanya, a little bit less. Vizalamta, the Torah talks about Hashavas Aveda. The Torah tells us, don't cover your eyes from it. Don't simply see a lost object, look at the lost object and say, nah, I don't see it. Right? The Torah says, don't cover your eyes from it. However, the Torah, when describing it, does say the word Vizalamta. Now, in context, the Torah does not mean that you should cover your eye. In context, the Torah is telling us, and about covering your eyes, don't do it. That's what the Torah says. But the Gemara, Kedarko, is going to take the pasuk and divide it. V'salamta, pa'amim sh'ata misalem, u'pa'amim sh'iyata misalem. Sometimes you're allowed to cover your eyes and ignore the lost object as if you don't actually see it. Ha'ketzad. Examples of that would be the following. Example number one, Kohen v'u Beis HaKvaros. Let's say you're a Kohen and the lost object is in the Beis HaKvaros. Now, I don't think that's Kavod Abrius. That's more of an issue of, you're a Kohen, you can't become Tamei. Don't go into a Beis HaKvaros in order to pick up the lost object. So it's interesting, that first example is not, to me, not a Kavod Abrius example. I'm not really sure what it's doing here in this list. Two, Zakim Ein Lefi Kvodo. You're an older person. And it's just not becoming of you to bend down, pick up an item, and to return the item. And again, it's a little bit strange. It's a mitzvah opportunity. What do you mean it's beneath you? You have a chance to do a mitzvah. But it's the idea of Kavod Abrius. It's true that it's a mitzvah. But also, you're a zakein, somebody who does not go down, bend over, and pick something up. Or let's say, for example, you're a skilled craftsman. Rashi gives the example, you're a diamond cutter. You're a skilled craftsman. And right now, your time is very, very valuable. And you are right now engaged in your work. And now you're going to bend down, pick up an item that costs $1, $2? It's not worth your time. Again, it's a mitzvah opportunity. It's hard to put a value on a mitzvah opportunity, But the idea is the same idea. It's covered abrius. It's just simply, it's beneath your dignity. And the Torah says, and therefore the Torah gives you license sometimes to just simply say, no, I don't see it. I don't have to deal with it. So, in the Gemara, without spelling out the question basically goes like this. So you see that there's a concept out there in halacha called kavod abrius. And if something's beneath human dignity, you could just simply say, no, I don't want to do that mitzvah. Gemara's extending that to our scenario over here. You have a kohen gadol. He's going to come to court. He's going to testify in court. Now again, testifying in court is a mitzvah. There's no question about it. Being part of the judicial process is a mitzvah. But again, it's beneath his kavod. It's simply not within his kavod to do that. And so the Gemara is just asking. I understand from a clinical perspective how he could go to court and testify. He's a kohen gadol, right? Nothing would impede him from doing so. But it's beneath his dignity. I'm Rav Yosef Meid Lamelech. So Rav Yosef gives the first attempt to answer this question. He says, "Well, I'll give you a scenario where it would not be beneath his dignity. And let's say, who's standing trial right now? The king. The king's standing trial. And since the king is standing trial, Kohen Gadol, it's not beneath his dignity to come and testify." Now, Rav Yosef's answer is not a good answer. The Gemara is about to point out, what do you mean? A king? King's never going to stand trial. King's not there. Standing trial. As we'll discuss for the rest of today's daf, after we get through the sugya. So, Al Amar Rav Zera Meila Ben Melech. Okay, so maybe, who's standing trial right now? The son of the king. Son of a king, that's an important position. So the Kohen Gadol, it's not beneath his dignity to come and stand and testify for the son of a king. So the Gemara says, Ben Melech Ejidu. Gemara says, what do you mean? Son of a king? He's a regular guy. Now that's funny. I actually heard the Hava mean a lot more than the Maskana, right? The son of the king says the Gemara is a regular guy. So what? So it's still
the son of the king.
I know. I
don't get that. How can he be a regular guy?
I understand that. I also like the Hava Mina, but the Gemara says Ben Melech Hedger too. He's just a regular guy. It's still that for that person. It's beneath the cover of the Kohen Gadol to come and testify.
Before the king.
Officially, he's a regular guy.
Is there such a
kind of prince in Judaism?
No. There are halachas regarding being mashuach, right, in terms of anointing him, right? His inauguration doesn't need the Shemin Mashicha, but he's a regular guy. Ela Meid Bifnei HaMelech. So the Gemara says, okay, so he is testifying in front of the king. The Gemara says, what? V'hain Moshe v'melech v'Sanhedrin. Again, what's going on? The king is not part of the Sanhedrin, can't become part of the Sanhedrin. So where are we right now? So the Gemara gives an interesting an interesting proposal. Again, the question is a very simple one. How is the Kohen Gadol coming and testifying in a court of law when it's beneath his dignity? So the Gemara proposes the following. Mishum Yikar de Kohen Gadol, also V'yasev. So, and Rashi over here tells us, we're going back to what we said a couple lines ago, but we're going to offer the following scenario. So this is really it's a drama series. The son of the king is standing trial, right? And the son of the king is standing trial for whatever he did, who knows, right? Insert salacious story. And the son of the king is standing trial. Now the king can't do anything. King can't testify. King can't serve as a judge. He can't be involved at all in the judicial process.
King can't pardon.
But who's got testimony? The Kohen Gadol. Kohen Gadol knows information, and he's got testimony. Now, generally speaking, it's not within the cover of a Kohen Gadol to come to court to testify, so that's normally true. But over here, it's the son of the king. Now, we just said a moment ago, the son of the king is just a regular guy, so what? The king, however, is coming to court. Not to do anything other than just sit there. Says the Gemara, Mishum Ikar de Kohen Gadol, also via Siv. King comes in, king sits down. Now the Kohen Gadol is going to testify. And isn't it beneath his cover? No, because the king's sitting there. Not doing anything other than just sitting there. Kai, who? The Azil. After the Kohen Gadol gives his testimony, the king gets up and the king leaves because he's not part of the whole judicial process. And then we're going to go through the court and through the legalities of this case to see what's going on. Okay? So it's Gemara comes up with perhaps a very bizarre scenario where you're going to find a Kohen Gadol testifying and it's not beneath his covered. Yeah.
The fact that the king's sitting there just for that testimony implies a lot of pressure.
Yes, agreed. Agreed. It's a bizarre scenario. And the Gemara has to come up to such a bizarre scenario just to find the Kohen Gadol there in the court. It is. It is. Gufo, Ein Moshe ben Melech b'Sanhedrin v'lo Melech v'Kohen Gadol b'Yibreshana. King cannot be involved in the Sanhedrin. And King and Kohen Gadol can have no involvement in Yibreshana. We spent a couple pages in the first parak of Sanhedrin talking about Yibreshana, the intercalation of the year, the adding of a month. You cannot have neither the king nor the Kohen Gadol involved for two very simple reasons. Well, actually, one simple reason, manifesting in two different ways. One simple reason is they're both no Geah Bedavar. They both have a partiality as to why they want the year either extended or not extended, and so therefore they will not give us a unbiased, objective view of why of whether or not the year should be added or not. Why can't I, the king, as part of the Sanhedrin? Because the pasuk says, "Lo san el riv." Don't answer to a fight. Don't get involved in a fight. However, we darshan lo san el rav. If the rav is there and the rav says something, don't respond. You cannot argue with the rav. And the and Rashi explains that the melech is there in a court, and the melech says, "You know, I think he's guilty." Okay, that's it. Silence amongst the other members of Sanhedrin. Well, who's going to argue with the king? Okay, so the king can't be part of the Sanhedrin. Lo melech v'kohen gadol b'yibreshana. Melech and Kohen Gadol cannot be part of Yibreshana. And again, it's the same reason, just manifesting in two opposite ways. Melech, mishum aspanya. The king has to pay. The king, Rashi explains, describes this aspanya as Mechalik mama lechal yaso, kach v'kach l'shana. King has part of his budget, part of his royal budget, is to give a certain allocation for his army. And he's paying on an annual basis. So the budget is per annum. And noach loshi kol hashanim u'baros. And instead of paying out on a 12-month basis, wouldn't it be easier to pay on a 13th-month basis?
No salary.
Yeah. We've had an extra month.
Okay. It makes cash flow problems a little bit better. Oh, good. So anyway, so the king every year, because of the money he's got to pay out, would much rather pay it out on a 13th month basis, not a 12-month. So if you asked him, his answer every year is going to be, yeah, this is a good year for Yibreshana. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're not going to ask him. And what about the Kohen Gadol? Kohen Gadol Mishum Tzina. Kohen Gadol is worried about Yom Kippur. I mean, that's all he's got to worry about. In the Second Temple, most of the time he died on Yom Kippur, so understandably, that's his chief concern is Yom Kippur. And he does not want a cold Yom Kippur. So if you asked him in the month of March, right, around Adar time, what do you think? You think we should add another month? So all he does is forecast 6 months ahead from now, add another month, and make Yom Kippur into the fall? No way, right? So his answer every year is going to be, don't add another month, right? Why is he called Yom Kippur? So it's actually two opinions, Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi says the water. He has to tov on the mikvah five times. That's Tosfos' question in Rashi. Okay, you're with the program. So that's Tosus's question on Rashi. Tosus says, "I don't understand Rashi." Like the Shayu Mechamim Amlokum Kumim Shochamim Yom Kippurim. The Gemara in Yuma says they heat the water up on Yom Kippur for the Kohen Gadol. So I don't like that. So Tosus says the cold floor. Kohen Gadol walks barefoot.
You still gotta get out. But the water is still gonna be cold.
Right. I guess we can ask on Tosfos. That's true. Not just with the Kohen Gadol. It's true with any Kohen. And it's not just a concern. It's not a concern on Yom Kippur. It would be a concern every day of the year. Right, right, but right. But he's on his feet all day on Yom Kippur. Okay. All right. Anyway, Kohen Gadol Mishum Tzina. Amar Rav Papa Shema Min Hashasa Basi Yarcha Azel. So the Gemara, Rav Papa has an interesting conclusion from all this. Now, it's funny, by the way. The conclusion is, as I'm going to explain in just a moment, it almost sounds like common sense. But Rav Papa makes it as like a declaration. The year follows the month. Literally, that's what it means. Shasa Basa Yarcha Azel. The year follows the month. But what Rav Papa is saying is that irrespective of whenever Shvat is, whenever Adar is, whenever Tishrei is, the year plows along, plugs along, and it doesn't care about the Jewish months. Now we know
solar
that.
Year.
Right, the solar year, the seasons. Now we know that. Of course that's true. In other words, the solar year operates on a fixed rate. Right? And we're just, and all we're trying to do is adjust the months by occasionally adding another month so that we're in sync with the seasons. It's funny, Rav Papa's making a statement that like sounds like a bold statement, and I'm probably not understanding it as well as I should be. But he's saying, you know, the season follows the year irrespective of what month it is. So the Gemara says, Ini, is that really true? And the Gemara is going to tell us a little episode amongst three shepherds. And it sounds from the story of the shepherds that really the months, the Jewish months, obviously, do follow the seasons. And it's not and it's not irregardless of where we are in the season. Let's see the story instead. Maybe we'll understand a little bit better after we see the story. Three Roy Bucker. Shepherds of cows. And the rabbis were overhearing the conversation. So a conversation, a simple conversation amongst three herdsmen, and the conversation goes like this. Chana marim bakir v'lakish kechada yenats din hu adar. V'em lav leis din or leis dain hadar. Oh, they're speaking in Aramaic. Makes it easy to understand what they're saying. If Rashi explains, the Bechir and the Lakish are the two different grains. The Bechir is the early grains from the word Bechor, and Lakish are the late grains. Early grains, says Rashi, is the wheat. Late grains are the barley. If they're coming at the same time, Kechada Yeinitz, right? Nitz is a bud. If they're budding at the same time, so you know what month this is? That's Adar. But if not, if they're not coming at the same time, this is not Adar. Okay? Again, let's go through the statements. Hopefully we'll get a sense of what's going on over here.
We went through that before with the fruit trees, right?
And the other one, the second one, says the following. Imtur, if you have a shur, an ox, bitsafar, bitlag yamus, and in the morning the tlag, the sheleg, is going to make it die. The ox is not going to die, as we'll see in just a moment, but it's about to die because it's so bitter cold in the morning. Uviti haran, as you get on in the day, bitul te'ena yidmoch, it goes in the tul is shade. Right? When we learn sukkah, the sukkah in Aramaic is called the talasa, matlalasa. And it goes in the shade of the fig tree because it's so hot. So really cold in the morning, warmer over the course of the day. Yishlach mashchei, it rubs itself against the tree in order to warm itself up. Deinu adar, that's adar. That's a great description of adar. The imlav lays dein adar, but if not, this is not adar. V'charamar, and then a third of them says kinum takif lechada yehi yafach b'lo'ucha nafik lekable. Really difficult Aramaic sentence. Rashi explains what it means is that the cold wind in the morning, and you blow against the cold wind, and your warm breath is able to combat the cold wind, that's Adar. And if not, if your breath can't combat the cold wind, the wind is too cold, Leis Dein Adar. Then this isn't Adar. Okay, so there are three shepherds, each one of them describing what they believe is the weather of Adar. And again, each one of them basically saying the same thing, three different ways. But they're basically saying, cold and warm. That's Adar, it's spring. cold in the morning, warm in the middle of the day. Your breath can knock out the cold wind. But they're all describing the month of Adar. And it's and wait, let's just get to the punchline. When the rabbis overheard the conversations of the shepherds, the rabbi said, this is no good. The weather's too cold. Let's add another month. Okay? And so now the Gemara is bothered by the following. Sounds from the discussion of the shepherds and from the rabbis' reactions to the shepherds that basically the shepherds were saying, this kind of weather typifies Adar, this kind of weather typifies Shvat, this kind of, in other words, they're describing the weather not based on any season but based on the month. Okay? And it kind of sounds like that the weather pattern is not irrespective of the Jewish months, but actually is in sync with the Jewish months. Okay, that's where the Gemara is going with this story.
But we make it to be synchronized.
Okay.
That's the whole point.
Yes. That's why this Gemara. I struggle with this Gemara. The Tizbar of Rabbanan Ravasa Samoch. So the Gemara says, really, the Chachamim are really relying and basing their whole decision of adding another month just simply because of a conversation of the shepherds. Really, the Chachamim, what is their prime mover is Cheshbon, right? The calculations. The Roe Bakar Astiyolahu Distaim El Sayyum. And now they have their Cheshbon. Their Cheshbon is their Cheshbon. They know the numbers and they do the accounting. It just happens to be that the conversation over here correlates with what they already know as the Cheshbon. And the Gemara says, and that's really what's going on over here. So, again, so basically it comes back to what Rav Papa said. Seasons are seasons. Weather is weather. And it will plow along regardless of what the Jewish months are. It just happens to be that there is a coordination between the seasons and the Jewish months. Okay. Kohen Gadol cannot be involved in any Chalitza Yibum activity. Nothing. Right? And right now we're focusing on Yibum. Right? I know we introduced this with Chalitza, just as a good rule of thumb to know. Whenever we have an introduction and it says the words V'chule, it means that we're not commenting on the words Cholitz V'cholzin, we are actually commenting on that line of the Mishnah. So over here we're focusing on the aspect of Yibum. Kohen Gadol can't do Yibum. Right? Look at the last Rashi on the page. And it doesn't matter whether his sister-in-law, the woman that was married to his brother who died, whether they went through Nisun or whether they went through Erisin. Now, two issues going on over here. Number one, Kohen Gadol is not allowed to marry an amana, a widow. Number two, Kohen Gadol has to marry a virgin. Those are two distinct aspects of a Kohen Gadol in terms of the candidacy of his wife. Okay? So here you have now a girl who is presented to him as a marriage opportunity. But she's got two strikes against her. Number one, she's a widow. Number two, she's a non-virgin. Right? So for those two strikes, he can't do the mitzvah of Yibum. But for a moment, though, let's imagine that they're not two strikes, but they're only one strike. Let's just imagine that she's an almana, but she's still a virgin. Right? Neat trick, right? How can that be? Easy. Because a marriage with her and his brother only went through the stage of Erisin, didn't get to the stage of Nisuin. So it's possible that there's a Yibam opportunity with a girl who is an almana, but not a, but still a virgin.
In the case, they don't do Chalitza anyway for like even a non-Kohen. In a case like that.
Well, just one second. Give me one moment. Okay, now if that would have been the scenario, how about doing the mitzvah of Yibum then? What do you mean, do the mitzvah of Yibum? She's an amana. Takes us to the beginning of Masechta Yevamos, where we learned over there the basic rule, Aseh docha lo saseh. A positive commandment does override a negative prohibition. Now there's a lot to that discussion. It's really the first four pages of Yevamos. There's a lot to that discussion, but that's the basic rule. So if the Kohen Gadol has a mitzvah opportunity, which is the mitzvah of Yibum, and the only thing standing in the way is that she's an almana, she's a widow, well, there's a positive commandment of Yibum against the almana, against the negative prohibition that she's a widow, should be a no-brainer. He should be able to do the mitzvah of Yibum.
Is there two negative prohibitions?
Why two? Oh yeah, but that Yibum overrides to begin with.
That's not considered.
It's all right. The way Tosa in the beginning of Amos explains it, it's like that doesn't exist. Okay, that you're right. Normally, it does exist, but when in Yibum scenario, it just doesn't. Just
Yibum is not a mitzvah. You have an option.
The Mishnah says the ain chalitza b'makom Yibum. Chalitza is the second best option at best, but it's not. Chalitza is not the same as Yibum. Yibum is a better mitzvah. Yeah, the Gemara, the Mishnah.
You have to do one or the other.
No, what you should do? You should do Yibum.
You should do
preferable.
Right, Yibum is preferable. Okay, so you have now. So good. So here's where the Gemara is going with this. So if in the scenario where she's an almana but still a virgin, and so now there's only one love preventing him from doing the mitzvah of Yibum, so don't let it stop him. Do the mitzvah of Yibum. Right? So this is going to be the Gemara's question. So kapasik v'tani lo shnamin erisim lo shnamin anisuin b'shlamim anisuin ha'v'yaseh v'lo saseh v'enaseh doche lo saseh v'aseh. So if she was married and she consummated her marriage, where now she is two prohibitions to him. Number one, an almana. Number two, she's a non-virgin. So now the mitzvah of Yibum can't conquer all that. But if all she is just an almana, let the mitzvah of Yibum take over. So Gemara gives an answer. Gemara raises the same discussion takes place in Yavamos, and the same answer. Gzera b'yirishona, atu b'yishnia. A fascinating answer of the Gemara. The mitzvah of Yibum is b'yirishona. Okay, now. In of itself, that takes a lot to digest. The mitzvah of Yibum is only that first act of relations between him and his sister-in-law. Now, in general, that doesn't mean that that's the only time that they're going to have relations. They're going to be married. Once you do the mitzvah of Yibum, you and her, husband and wife, l'chol davar, vis-a-vis everything. So it's
isn't the mitzvah of Yibum to propagate your brother's name, so by having a child, until they have a child, he hasn't really done the
right,
mitzvah.
Right, but when you read the pasuk though, it's Yavama Yavo Aleha. Right? The actual mitzvah, the Maisa mitzvah, is that first act of Bia. Now, what that Bia. Right. Now, that Bia Rishona now turns the relationship into a regular marriage, and now that you have a regular marriage, so okay, fine, so you live together as husband and wife. Over here, however, the mitzvah saseh, the formal mitzvah saseh, is only that Bia Rishona. After that point in time, it's just now a regular marriage. Problem is that after the Bia Rishona, yes, the Bia Rishona is fine, because the Bia Rishona is a mitzvah saseh. It'll override her status of Aman, and that's fine. But after that point in time now, there's no longer a Maisa mitzvah in Yibum, in the world of Yibum, from that point forward. And she's still an almana. She always will be an almana.
But since it's going to be his wife, doesn't have a mitzvah asset to be with his wife anyway?
Correct. But that's...
I mean, another asset mitzvah takes over right after, as soon as we...
That's not true.
Why not?
Because then that logic can be extended to any marriage.
No, but...
Anytime anyone marries someone, they can't marry. Right.
But the thing is that that's a different story.
He can't
say
he's married to a divorcee who he marries because
this is his wife now. As soon as he has the first set of beer, that's his wife.
It's his wife, but she's still an almana. That can never change about her. She is and will always be an almana. And he's a Kohen Gadol. Kohen Gadol can't marry an almana. Oh, so you have the mitzvah of Bia for Yibum, but that's only the first time. He's right.
Said that not only applies in a marriage, which is sanctioned by the Torah. This marriage is not sanctioned by the Torah.
Right.
He's already saying it's
he already surpassed the first.
He should have been Rishon.
So the Gemara is saying no. The Gemara is saying Zera, no. Yeah. In principle, you could. In principle, it would work, but for obvious reasons, right?
What if he has a child?
After the first one. But again, the Chachamim won't let it get to that point. Gzeira bi arishana to bi ashniya. That's a gzeira. Tanya nami hachim kidmu balu bi arishana kanu. The Braisa actually, right, although the Mishnah makes it sound like it's not going to happen, Braisa says if he does it, which he shouldn't have, but if he does it, he was Kona. The Asa like Kaiman. However, can't keep her Bibi Ashniya. You have to get a divorce. Mace, we're going to go now. We'll start King in just a moment, but we're going to go now through a lot of funeral procession.
Is there any ramifications for that, though, for him?
No, in other words, from that...
He didn't violate the Torah.
Right.
So right.
There's nothing really stopping him from doing it.
For the first time, other than the fact that the rabbi said don't do it, but other than that small detail, you're right, nothing's stopping him.
Don't do it as halacha or don't do it as a recommendation?
No, a gezeira. It's halacha. When the Gemara says gezeira...
Well, this is the rabbi.
We described this when we learned the Mishnah. Kohen Gadol, when following one of his Zion Krovim, so again, so he cannot become Tamei because he's a Kohen Gadol. Regular Kohen can become Tamei. He can't. He's a Kohen Gadol. So he follows. He follows a full block behind the procession. The Yotze at Pesach, but it only goes up to the entrance of the city. Shapir Kamar Rav Yehuda Amlecha Rav Meir Ihachil Beis Onami Lo. The Gemara says Rav Meir, right? Rav Yehuda says he can't live the Beis Hamikdash because the Torah says Amin Hamikdash Lo Yetze. So Rav Meir says no. Don't take that pasuk literally. You can't. What? He's not going to go home at night. He's not going to sleep in his house. It's absurd. When the Torah says min hamikdash, it does not mean a physical place. It means a state of being kadosh. And the fact is that as long as he stays a full block behind the procession, he will not come into contact with the body. Rabbi Yehuda, now it's interesting, by the way, Gemara does this very subtly. Rabbi Yehuda concedes, but Meir is right. Of course, Rav Meir is right. Kohen Gadol is not living in the Beis Hamikdash. Kohen Gadol is not sequestered to the Beis Hamikdash for the rest of his life once he becomes a Kohen Gadol. You're absolutely correct. But Rav Yehuda still maintains he can't even follow the procession. Even at a distance of being a block away, he can't follow the procession. Agav Mararei Dilma Mikre Ve'asavinaga. Because the Kohen Gadol is going to get very emotional, understandably. This is one of the Zion Krovim. It'll be one of the seven relatives. So even a block away, because of his anguish that he has over the loss of his relative, so it's very possible that the emotions will get the best of him, and he'll want to come into contact with the coffin. So therefore, Rav Yehuda says he cannot follow the procession at all.
This thing applies even to a Kohen.
No, Kohen. What do you mean for Zion? For Zion? No. Oh, for right. Oh, for none.
This is about not going. That opinion of the Tana doesn't apply because the Kohen head you can go to the Zion.
Right.
But I was under the impression Kohen can go like up to the. They can't be in the Ohel with the mace, but they can go.
They can,
as long as they're not technically
right.
You're talking about the Kohen Gadol here, though.
Right.
The same thing applied by a Kohen Head, this hide and seek game.
Right. I hear you. Right. Kohen Gadol. Kohen can follow. Yeah, that's my general sense.
Kishum could also become Tamei for his parents.
Right.
That doesn't apply to Kohen Gadol. That's the main reason why Kohen Gadol has to go back a block away, because anything even remotely close to being.
Correct. Kishum and Nachim. Tan Rabban Kishu over Beshur and Nachim as Acherim. So the Gemara gives us now the protocols of Nichum Avilim for the Kohen Gadol. It's very formal, as we'll see right now, and it's just, whatever. It's, these are the protocols of a Kohen Gadol. So when he gives Nechama, so Siganu Mashuach Shavra B'Yamino, so the deputy and the Kohen Mashuach Machama, the Kohen who is leading the troops into war, so they're on his right. Rosh Beis Av Ve'Avelim V'Cholam Mismolo, the Beis Av and the Avelim are on his left. Ukishu Amid B'Shura Mitznachem Acherem, And when he's standing on the shura and he's extending comforts to others, the skan is on his right, the rosh beis av is on his left. But the mishuach she'avar, if you have a past kohen gadol who right either got too old or sick or tame, whatever the case is, should not go and be menachem the kohen gadol. My time of chal shadate saver kachadi be, because now that the mishuach sees that the kohen gadol is sitting shiva and is in avelus himself, so being visited by such an individual, the past kohen gadol, it will be tension, animosity. He'll say to himself, "Kachadi be, look, he's rejoicing in my in my mourning." This little bit of Gemara, it's interesting, is used a lot by the poskim when discussing the question of, let's say there's somebody that really you don't like, and he doesn't like you, and you're sonim. You really despise one another. So, and he's an avelus. Can he go pay him a visit when he's an avel? And it's interesting. Some of the poskim say yes, some of the poskim say no. And it's the same question comes up.
What about mitzvah as a lot? I mean, there's a mitzvah to visit avel.
Right. So the Rambam says it's a mitzvah. I mean, it's a mitzvah to Rabbanon.
The question is, it's an ichor.
Right. Right. But the bigger, the bigger.
If he's not going to be happier there, you're not doing
it. Actually, there's no lotasa. There's a mitzvah aser. The Rabbanon.
But no, no. But
the menachem avelam. So
no, right. No. But the issue is right. Say Rabbi Tushel saying it well. The issue is the issue of is he going to be comforted when I come into his house? He doesn't like me. I don't like him. And now he's sitting shiva. And I walk into the guy's house, is he going to feel comforted? Or as the Gemara describes over here, when the two Kohanim, there's only one Kohen Gadol, and one is, the ex-Kohen Gadol.
What about the mitzvah of not bearing a grudge against somebody?
Okay, I just...
There shouldn't be any grudge in the first place.
Correct, but there's... Right, but there's also human nature. The Gemara just is dealing with basic human nature.
I think the Rama says he shouldn't go.
Shouldn't, that's correct. Correct, Rama says it's not a good idea. Amar papa shmamina mehamas visa talas. Three things you get from this braisa. Generally speaking, shmamina hainus gan hainem mamuna. So the deputy and the mamuna are one and the same person. Shmamina avelam omdim avichola am ovrim. Now, it's interesting. When you make this shura, Avelim are stationary, and the Am is passing over the Avelim. Now, anyone who's been at a funeral, it's just the opposite. It's the exact opposite. Why that is, we'll understand better as we get through a couple more lines of Gemara. Ushmamina Avelim l'smol menachmim heinomdim. And also, the Avelim are to the left of the comforters. Tanu Rabbanan. Now we'll understand a little bit better why things have changed. There were two families in Yerushalayim who just didn't get along with one another. Each one clamoring for the opportunity to go first, and I guess things got heated between these two families. And they said, this is just not a good idea. Therefore, because of this fighting that took place in terms of line and order and line, I should say, so then we just switched everything. I mean, these are all minhagim. So they changed the minhag, and I guess in this scenario, there was a good reason to change the minhag, so there wouldn't be fighting. So they would have the people standing, and the avelim would walk through the people. And now the rest of the story and why it is now. It's the Avelim who walk, and the people comforting are the ones standing still. Amar Ami Bar Abba Yechzer Rabbi Yossi Yisad Davul Yoshna B'Tzipori Shiu Avelim Omdim V'Cholam Ovrim. In Tzipori, so Rami Bar Abba reversed everything back to the original. V'Amar Ami Bar Abba Yitkin Rabbi Yossi B'Tzipori, other institutions that were made in the town of Tzipori. Tzipori is right next to Tveria. Shalote Isha Mahaleches B'Shuk Uvna Achareha. When a woman's working in the marketplace, she should make sure that her son walks in front of her, not behind her. The Gemara alludes to an event that takes place. We don't know what the event was. Rashi does fill us in on detail. They kidnapped the son, V'nasnua b'vei so, they held the son, u'kishechazav alarasa, yitzchilav so ekes, u'vokheh, woman now has a son missing, she's crying, ba'echem mehem v'amar bo'i ve'er'en alech. So one of the kidnappers says, come, I'll show you where the son's hiding. And then she goes in and they rape her. So, a horrific story. So as a takana to try to help prevent things like this, so the son always should walk in front of the mother. It's not appropriate for people to talk in the bathroom. Right? It's a lack of tzniyus. People shouldn't talk in the bathroom. Especially while they're actually relieving themselves, but in general, you shouldn't talk. However, in Tzipori, they mandated that women should talk in the bathroom. Vishem Yichud, because of Yichud, right? Rashi explains further that we're afraid that they're in the bathroom and a man doesn't know that and will walk in on them, violating the prohibition of Yichud, one man and two women, and so therefore they'll talk. He'll know that women are there in the bathroom, and he'll know not to go in. Right, the idea of men and women's bathroom, that's a modern innovation. Amar of Menashe bar Ava shielded Rabbi Yoshia, Rabbi Beveis Amen de Hutzal. I asked the following question while we were in the Beis Olamin, that means a cemetery, and we were up in the town of Hutzal. The Amarli Enshur Pchusa Me'asar B'nei Adam. Shura, the line that's formed in order to create Nichum Avelim, should be made up of a minimum of 10 men. The Ein Avelim in a minion, and the Avel's not part of the minion. And it doesn't matter which format you go with, whether the Avel is stationary or the Avel is moving, it doesn't matter. Now when he's being comforted, now the Mishnah tells us what his response is when other people comfort the Kohen Gadol. What does he tell the other people? So we have a Brice, and the Brice that says, Tis nachamu, you should be comforted. Now, heichidam yelemi ki menachme achrina lididei, what is that? What's that bracha describing? When he's the mourner, so amalahu hiu, tis nachamu, nachash karamalahu. If he's being comforted, his response is not going to be, oh, you people should be comforted. Well, it's like nichush. You're like forecasting a bad sign for somebody else. Is that what? Ela ki menachem lachrina amalahu tis nachamu shmamina. When he comforts other people, the correct terminology is tis nachamu. You should be comforted. I don't know why his formula of nechama be different than other people, because of his status of Kohen Gadol. I'm not, there's a sensitivity over here which I'm not following what the sensitivity is. Melech Lodan. Okay, here we go. And now we start a discussion about the king. King can't be involved in the judicial process. Cannot judge, cannot be judged, can't serve as a witness, nothing. Zero. Can't be involved. The obvious question is, why not? Why not? He's the king. And so what? But he's chayv in all mitzvahs in the Torah. Right? In fact, there's other governing laws of the Torah that apply to him that don't apply to others. But he's a Jew. I mean, why can't he be involved in the court? And again, din is a mitzvah, judging is a mitzvah, so why not? Right? It's a simple question. Melech lo dan, Amar Rav Yosef lo shenu l'amache Yisrael. Av amache beis David dan v'dan enoso. This idea is only limited to Mache Yisrael. But Mache beis David, anyone who's a descendant, a direct descendant of David, dan v'dan enoso. How do I know that? Dechsev pasuk in Yirmiyahu beis David ko amar Hashem dino laboker mishpat.
I'm just saying, they're king or they want kings or no kings from the beis David?
No, kings from beis David are involved in din. The pasuk in Yirmiyahu says ko amar Hashem dino laboker mishpat.
Okay. Isn't the beis David's kingship like eternal?
Correct.
So how could there be any other king?
But there were. Well, I mean, I understand your question, but the answer is there were. There were kings up north.
Right,
they're the Chashma.
Feels that there's a middle category of the
right.
The Malchus fell out.
Right. You're right. In print, right. In principle, kingship goes to Beis David and to all of his lineage. But we see historically, we saw that there were other kings. The Elo Dainin La'iu Eicha Dainin. The Gemara says now, we can we can judge the king. Well, if we judge the king, so I'm sorry, if we can't judge the king, how can he judge? In order to judge others, you first have to be judged yourself, right? You cannot be in the position of judging others if you yourself are impervious to being judged. So my time alone. So the Gemara says, okay, so Beis David can be involved in judging, in being judged and judging others. It's Machi, so it's the other kings. Any other king of the Jewish people, no, has no business being part of the judicial process. And why not? So what difference does it make? You come from Beis David, you don't come from Beis David. What difference does it make? So the Gemara says all this is based on one episode. An unbelievable story that we're about to read in the Gemara, really unbelievable story. And the first thing I'll do is I'll just state the issue, the problem, and then we'll see the story inside. But the story we're about to read is about Yanai HaMelech. Great stories that we see throughout the Gemara about Yanai HaMelech. Yanai HaMelech was a later king. Came after the period of Herod, was a descendant of Herod, Yanai HaMelech. Not a good king of the Jewish people, and we're now deep into the Second Temple period. So it's interesting, what the Mishnah is describing now is a reaction to a story that takes place historically sometime in the middle of Bayit Sheni. Yanai HaMelech had a brother-in-law. The brother-in-law's name was Shimon B'Shetach. They had a terrible relationship. Terrible relationship. But a good part of it has to do with the fact that Yanai HaMelech killed most of the Chachmei Yisrael. He was anti-religious, he was anti-rabbi, right? He was nasty. He was a brutal man. In fact, the only reason why he didn't kill Shimon ben Shetach is because Shimon ben Shetach was his brother-in-law.
I don't remember that.
Could be right. Gemara in Brachos, it's a bizarre story. The Gemara in Brachos tells us that after Shimon ben Shetach finished his meal, he wanted a bench, but he didn't know how to bench, and he killed all the rabbis. So it was a little bit of a conundrum. Like, what am I going to do now? So what he did is he called his brother-in-law and he said, "Okay, come over because I need to bench." It's a bizarre story because for obvious reasons. Anyway, all right. So that's a little bit about Yanai HaMelech and Shimon ben Shetach. Our story over here in Sanhedrin goes like this. Avdid Yanai HaMelech kata nafshe. The slave of Yanai HaMelech killed somebody. So Amalu Shema Meshetel Chachamim Tinu Anechem Bo V'nidon Nenu. So let's judge. Now, he's a slave. So, I mean, in other words, I guess the slave will stand trial, but really the slave is property. So in other words, it's a property of a person who did damage, so you take the person, the owner of the property, to court. The owner of the property is Yanai HaMelech.
Like an ox.
Yeah. The analogy is excellent, as you'll see in just a moment. Shalchule Abdecha, Shalchule, so they subpoenaed him. So they're subpoenaing the king. Abdecha katal nafsha. You know, your slave killed somebody? Shajuluhu, they sent for him. Shalchule ta'ant namilacha. You need to come here, they said to Yanai HaMelech, v'hu ad bivalav. Because we need to testify against the owner of the ox. Now the pasuk over here being quoted from Mishpatim is talking about the owner of an ox. Now it's not the ox of Yanai that killed; there was a slave of Yanai that killed. But again, it's both. It's property. Property of Amar Tari Yavo Baha Shor V'Yamod Al Sharo. Torah says that the owner of the shore has to stand by as his ox is being tried. Also V'Yasiv. So they subpoena Yanai HaMelech, and Yanai HaMelech is coming to court. This is the court now. Shimon ben Shetach. Now Shimon ben Shetach had absolutely no fear whatsoever. He was a fearless individual, right? Very strong Jew. Right? Anyone who's being judged needs to stand. So he points to Shimon Meshetach and says, "You need to stand up." And we're going to testify against you. Now remember, over here we're in court, and it's not just us standing over here. Kadosh Baruch Hu is right here with us. So, just remember that.
Seems we're going to kill the rest of them.
Yeah. Shenemar v'amdu shen Hashem Hashalem Ariv, and the pasuk says lifnei Hashem. So Amalo lo kishatomer ata ela kamashi yomer chavrecha. So Yanai HaMelech looks at Shimon ben Shetach, says, "Look, I don't want to hear it from you. I want to hear it from the others. Right? He's sitting in front of a Beis Din. And he says, I don't want to hear it from you. Let me hear the other judges right now. Let me hear them speak to me. This is before he killed, this is after he killed the Chachamim Amin. They're there, so it sounds like before he killed them, but certainly not everyone is as brave and as strong as Shimon Meshetach. Nifne Liamino. So Shimon Meshetach now, he's got judges to the right, judges to the left, he turns to the right. Kafshu Paneim Bekarka. They take their head and they bury it down in the ground. They're not ready to stand up to Yanai Melech. Nifne Lasmolo Vikafshu Paneim Bekarka. Turns to the left, same reaction. Amalam Shimon Meshetach Balei Machshavo Satem. You know, you people should be thinking individuals. It's ridiculous. Yavo Bal Machshavos V'yiparim Echem. I want the Baal Machshav is the ultimate thinker, Kadosh Baruch Hu. I want him to extract punishment right away. Miad ba Gavriel v'chavtan b'karku umesu. All the judges on his right and left died. Gavriel comes and he kills them. Now, this is the end of the story as we have it in the Gemara. Obviously, it was a disaster. It was a total disaster. And their fear of Yanai HaMelech basically suppressed the court. They couldn't go forward with the judicial process. But also Shah Amru Melech Lo Dam Velo Dan Noso Lo Mo Lo Meid Velo Meid Noso. So from that point forward, they said, you know what? This is ridiculous. We're not going to have a king as part of the judicial process. You see what happens when this takes place.